From NPR News in Washington, I'm Ray Suarez, and this is Talk of the Nation.
The Boy Scouts of America has long taught traditional family values that are held by the scouting families. And a homosexual is not a role model for those family values.
Eagle Scout James Dale found the Boy Scout law has a 13th point. Not only is a scout trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent, he's also heterosexual. When Dale was expelled from the scouts for being gay, he began a legal battle that concluded this week with a New Jersey court deciding that scouting had violated the state's anti-discrimination law. The Boy Scouts say a private organization can set its own rules. That hasn't always been enough to win the argument. Talk of the Nation after news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The second-ever female test pilot in the Air Force will become the first woman to command a space shuttle mission. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Eileen Collins will command a mission likely in December. She was introduced at a White House ceremony today by President and Mrs. Clinton. Collins is 41 and has flown before on two shuttle missions. She was the pilot on a 1995 shuttle flight. American weapons inspector Scott Ritter has returned to work in Iraq. He had vowed to return when he left Iraq abruptly in January. NPR's Eric Weiner, who is in Baghdad, says Ritter's return is a kind of test for Iraqi leaders.
Clearly, they cannot be too happy about this development. This is a man that Iraq is accused of being an American spy. And as you recall, in January, Iraqi officials refused to cooperate with any UN weapons inspection team that was led by Scott Ritter. Now, at that time, Ritter vowed to return to Iraq, and in fact, that's what he's done today.
Iraq has pledged to fully comply with the inspection agreement it signed earlier this year with UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright is traveling to Europe. Her first stop on the five-day trip is Ukraine. The former Soviet republic receives nearly $250 million each year in American aid. Albright says she will take a strong message of friendship to Kiev. Third-party money is playing a high-profile role in a California special election next week. It could be a trend in this year's campaigns, too. Spending by a conservative political action committee has centered this race on abortion. NPR's Elizabeth Arnold reports.
Spending by a conservative political action committee called the Campaign for Working Families has dominated the special election to fill the California seat, and it's just the beginning. The PAC's chairman, Gary Bauer, and his chief strategist, Peter Dickinson, are looking ahead to a primary later this month in Illinois, backing candidates who support a ban on certain late-term abortions. The group will have spent $200,000 in television ads in California by next week's race. The ads have forced abortion rights groups to respond with TV ads of their own, transforming a race that would have been about education and health care. The same scenario is likely to occur in Illinois and other states in this election cycle, as outside groups increasingly take advantage of campaign laws that allow them to spend unlimited dollars on independent issue ads. Elizabeth Arnold, NPR News, Washington.
The Justice Department says Yogesh Gandhi, suspected of illegally funneling contributions into the Democratic Party, has been arrested by the FBI on unrelated fraud charges. The agency reports Gandhi's accused of getting corporate American Express cards for himself and his wife by forging a co-worker's name. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 71 points at 8,467 in heavy trading. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, the Iowa Supreme Court has moved to take control of large livestock facilities out of the hands of local officials. The decision could have broad consequences in other farm states. Mark Moran of member station WOI reports from Des Moines.
The Iowa High Court's ruling overturns a lower court ruling that allowed county governments to determine where large hog confinements could be built and how big they could be. But in its decision, the Iowa Supreme Court said local governments do not have the authority to make those rules. Aaron Healy Lehman is with the Iowa Farmers Union, a group which advocates for small farmers. He says the group will take its fight for local control to state lawmakers.
Clearly, the legislature has the authority to allow the counties to have some say in these matters.
The ruling could have implications in other states that are fighting for local control. Critics of large livestock operations say they threaten air and water quality. The Iowa ruling came as the federal government announced its own plans to monitor and control these facilities. For NPR News, I'm Mark Moran in Des Moines.
A leading maker of children's car seats is recalling a particular brand. Evenflo is recalling 800,000 of its popular On My Way combination infant carrier car seats. The recall is for model number 207, a seat and carrier, and model number 492, a seat, carrier, and stroller. Retailers are reporting mostly strong sales for last month. The weather pattern called El Niño is getting much of the credit and the blame. In areas of the country with warmer-than-expected weather, sales were better than expected. But retailing firms in California, suffering under heavy rain, saw the reverse. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations. Other contributors include the National Science Foundation, supporting education and research in science, math, and technology.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Ray Suarez. This week, a gay man prevailed in court against the Boy Scouts of America. The Scouts, a revered youth organization with deep roots in American life, has a stated policy that it does not accept homosexuals as boy members or as adult volunteers or staff. The man seeking reinstatement in a volunteer post as an adult leader or scouter is James Dale, who was expelled 8 years ago when local scout authorities in New Jersey discovered Dale was gay through a newspaper article. He had joined scouting at 8 as a cub, and as a scout filled his sash with merit badges on the way to earning the highest award the organization can give a boy member, the Eagle. In the scout oath, repeated at every meeting as a boy marches through boyhood into the teen and young adult years, a scout promises to do his duty to God and country and promises on his honor to keep himself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight. For scouting, the phrase morally straight means, among other things, straight, a heterosexual. It has long been the policy of scouting that being homosexual is incompatible with being morally straight. I should mention at this point that I, like James Dale, am an Eagle Scout, and have been associated with scouting for more than 25 years as a boy member and adult volunteer. Looking back on the years I helped guide boys and young men, I can't remember a time when the issue of sexuality came up, but that may be by default, since the overriding assumption is that everyone around you is, or will be, straight. But it never loomed very large in the year-in, year-out whirl of community service, scout craft, trips, games, and fellowship, because these years are, for many of the boys, ideally pre-sexual. Your own beliefs on this question may come down to how you answer this question. When the guidance needed by boys does include questions regarding identity, sexual morality, and the sometimes anxiety-filled journey from boyhood to adulthood, would a gay scout leader provide answers all that different from those provided by a straight man? The Scouts maintain that these membership rules are an appropriate one for a private voluntary organization, but when you think of the hubbub that's accompanied the defense of athletic clubs that exclude blacks or Jews, organizations that exclude women, the Boy Scouts would seem to be in a tough spot, especially since this is an organization that, while technically private, has had a generations-long relationship with public schools and local government. How much can the Boy Scouts maintain? How much say can the Boy Scouts maintain over the private convictions of its members? Can a gay man provide morally sound leadership for young boys? We'll begin with Greg Shields, national spokesman for the Boy Scouts of America, on the line from Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me on.
Well, what did the Scouts maintain in court, and what are you saying at this point, now that the matter has been settled, at least in New Jersey?
Well, the Boy Scouts has a right, as a voluntary association, to teach the traditional family values we've taught since 1910. And we maintain that we have a right to establish membership and leadership standards. The court obviously disagreed with us by a 2-1 margin, and we intend to appeal that decision to the New Jersey Supreme Court.
At the same time, I think you've prevailed in California where a leader has been forced out because of his acknowledgement that he was gay. What does this? Could this, if the Jersey decision is not overturned by a higher court and the California decision is not overturned by a higher court, leave a national organization with different standards in different states of the union?
Well, we're confident that the courts will rule in our favor. You're right, these are different state courts and different state laws, so they do present some differing challenges to us. But the fact is that we feel that as a voluntary association, we have a constitutional right to establish our standards of leadership and membership, and we're confident that we can maintain those standards.
Well, a voluntary organization, but one that I think a good argument could be made is in very tight with local law enforcement organizations. Explorer posts are often chartered by public institutions. There are very close associations in the community service realm with government. Many governments which have standards very different from the ones you've just stated.
Mm-hmm. We do have close associations with many government organizations, but we ask no treatment that any other organization might not receive. For example, if a Cub Scout den were to meet in a church, in a school basement, a public school basement, we would simply ask to be treated the same as a growing church might use the basement on a Sunday morning or a Saturday night. If there's a fee, we'd pay the fee. If there's a requirement to clean up, we'd clean up. Or if the public school is not open to community groups, that's fine. We'll find another place to meet. We're not asking for special privilege. We're supported by our own membership fees, and that's the way we operate.
But people who know gay men and women do not think that that living a moral life is incompatible with being homosexual. They don't have another Boy Scouts to join if they find that that not to their liking. Well, there might be another church to join. There might be another school to go to. There might be all kinds of options of affiliation. But the Scouts, because of its unique history, there's not any other Scouts.
Mm-hmm. Well, we respect everyone's rights to live the lifestyle that they want to live. We respect their rights to believe what they want to believe. We simply ask other people to respect our rights to come together as Boy Scouts.
Greg Shields is a national spokesman for the Boy Scouts of America. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Ray. Appreciate it.
Joining us for the rest of the hour is Evan Wolfson, senior staff attorney and director of the Marriage Project for the Lambda Legal Defense Fund and Education Fund, and the attorney for James Dale. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And David Bowes is the author of Libertarianism, a Primer. He's here with me in Studio 3A. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Our number in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Evan Wolfson, tell us more about the Jersey court's ruling and the rationale it used in saying that the Boy Scouts had violated anti-discrimination laws.
Well, the court rejected both of the Scouts' main arguments, and it was interesting that Mr. Shields only gave one of them. The first argument that the Boy Scouts has been making in court, which of course is very different from what they say to the public, is that they ought to be exempt from the law against discrimination, which in New Jersey protects all people against discrimination based on race, religion, sex, or sexual orientation. The Boy Scouts are in court saying they shouldn't be covered by this law. They should be free to discriminate. And the state court in New Jersey rejected that argument, saying that this is a very large organization. It holds itself out to the public as open to all boys. That's their language, open to all boys. They advertise to the public. They have, as you said, a very close relationship with schools and police departments and fire departments and other taxpayer-funded entities. They use public lands. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of members. There are over 100,000 youth and adult members in New Jersey alone. There are more than 5 million members across the country. This is not some small little organization that meets in a treehouse somewhere. So the court said they are covered by the law, just like other large organizations have been found to in the past when they tried to discriminate. And secondly, the court rejected the Boy Scouts' attempt to use the First Amendment as a shield against the law. The court said that in order to determine whether an organization has a true First Amendment right of association that trumps a law against discrimination, what courts should look to is the purpose for which the members came together, not just some things that some members happen to believe, but the reasons that that people joined this organization. And in the case of the Boy Scouts, the court found clearly this diverse group of millions of people across the country did not come together to express an anti-gay purpose. They are not coming into this organization in order to promote bigotry. They are coming into this organization to promote the good things that the Boy Scouts represents and the good things that my client, James Dale, exemplified on behalf of this organization.
But in the case of the voluntary organization, and a private one at that, there are many social, fraternal, community service organizations that do have membership that is exclusive in one way or another. Jews do not become post-commanders of the Knights of Columbus. Someone who says, walking through the door, that they're an atheist would have a very difficult time being a Mason, which I understand one of the cornerstone tenets of the organization is that you believe in God. The Scouts themselves have trouble around the country where they're being taken to court over religious exclusion, because while they do not prescribe that you believe in one faith or another, they do require that you have one. And they are finding that people who are atheists still want to be Boy Scouts and insist that they have some right to be. Why do you have some right to be?
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court has heard that kind of argument before, and they set out in three major cases within 4 years in the 1980s under Chief Justice Berger and then under Chief Justice Rehnquist in unanimous opinions a framework for balancing the important, indeed the compelling, reasons for anti-discrimination laws that we have in this country, including in New Jersey, on the one hand, and on the other hand, genuine claims of expressive association. And the court said in order to reconcile these important rights, both of which Lambda is very committed to, what courts should do is look at the true expressive purposes for which the organization came together. And the classic example that people usually think of is, for example, an organization like the KKK. The KKK could truly say that being forced to admit black members or Asian members or Jewish members or gay members would send an inherently conflicting message about what the organization came together to express. That is, the need to be separate, the need to segregate, the need to discriminate.
It would lead to some tense meetings, too.
Exactly. And it would interfere substantially with what that organization really is about, what the people really join that organization to be part of. But the Boy Scouts is not the KKK. People don't come into the Boy Scouts in order to express an anti-gay message. Look at who is active in the Boy Scouts. In New Jersey alone, 25% of the organizations, of the troops within the Boy Scouts, are sponsored by the public schools. Now, obviously, the public schools are not joining an organization or taking part in an organization or sponsoring an organization in order to send an anti-gay message that is flatly contrary to the law of the state. Police departments, fire departments, churches, synagogues, it just goes on and on. Now, I understand that some of the churches that may sponsor some troops throughout the country may have anti-gay attitudes, but many of the others do not. Many of the synagogues do not. So obviously the fact that these organizations, whether they be public or private, who are taking part in the Boy Scouts, disagree over gay people or sex or sexuality or other questions means that those are not the reasons they came together in this organization. They are not the central purpose of the organization, and accordingly, there is no First Amendment shield against the important law against discrimination.
Evan Wolfson was the attorney for James Dale in his recent successful suit against the Boy Scouts in New Jersey. David Bowes is here with me in Washington. Should the Boy Scouts be able to say who's in and who's out without regard to the laws of the state on those same sorts of matters?
Well, I think any private association should be able to set the rules for who belongs and what the purpose of the organization is. I think if you want a society based on diversity and pluralism, you don't want a society where there's one rule that the government makes and everybody's got to follow it. You want diverse and pluralistic organizations. And it's okay to have gay organizations, and it's okay to have the Boy Scouts that say they don't let gays in. It's okay to have Christian and Jewish churches. You know, this argument that we've all got to think the same and be the same and all organizations have to be the same way really is the same argument as for an established church. People used to think, boy, if you didn't have one established church, then society would fall apart. People would be off in different little sects and things. And fortunately, in America, we got past that. We think it's okay for people to have different rules and different beliefs. And Evan doesn't agree with the Boy Scouts' beliefs. I'm not here to defend the beliefs of the Boy Scouts, but I'm here to defend the right of individual Americans to come together in a private association and make whatever rules they want to.
But Evan Wolfson was very careful not to make the argument that we all have to believe the same thing and all join the same organizations and all say that the same things are right or wrong. He made a distinction about the organizing principles that bring different kinds of organizations together.
Yes, and I thought that was a very interesting argument. And I think the question is, who's going to define the purpose for which an organization is set up? Will it be its board of directors, its members, the people who give it money, the people who join, the people who work for it? Or will it be lawyers and judges and politicians? Do we really want, we've got millions of private associations in America, do we really want public interest lawyers going into court or going into Congress and asking judges and politicians to look at every one of those organizations and say, well, you may think your purpose is this, but we've concluded that your purpose is something else. We've concluded that one of your policies doesn't fit what we think your purpose is. I think that probably the local officers and members and board of directors of the Boy Scouts can probably figure out what the purpose of scouting is.
Well, actually, if it were that simple, I think Mr. Boas might have a point. But in fact, the Supreme Court, in three cases in 4 years, had to look at exactly how to make that determination. And what they said was, it's not a matter of public interest lawyers deciding what the purpose of the organization is. It is what is the members' purpose. Why did the members come together? Not some bureaucrat in the Boy Scout headquarters in Irving, Texas, not their hired gun lawyers in courts, but the membership of the Boy Scouts as a whole. And how does a court find that out? It looks, for example, at the documents, at the material, at the statements that the members themselves see. So, for example, the court in our case looked at the Boy Scout handbook, not some lawyer's brief tucked in a file, but the Boy Scout handbook itself. The Boy Scout handbook says, here's how we define, quote-unquote, morally straight. And I'd like to read it because it's short and I think goes right to the heart of what this case is about. The Boy Scout handbook says morally straight means to be of strong character, to guide your life with honesty, purity and justice, to respect and defend the rights of all people, to have relationships with others that are honest and open. That's it. That's what the Boy Scouts are saying to their members. That's what the members are reading and seeing and believing when they join this organization. The problem here is that the lawyers and the Boy Scouts officials in Texas, not the members, are hijacking what the organization is about at the very same time as they're going into the schools and holding themselves out to the public as saying we're open to all boys.
Evan, are you trying to argue that the members of the Boy Scouts, their adult volunteers and their boy members, have been defrauded, that they joined this organization thinking it was open to gays and they're up in arms and outraged that their organization is not?
Actually, there is a fair amount of discussion and controversy going around throughout the country now where various people are saying, wait a minute, that's not what it's about at all.
But Evan, why don't we let them make the decision? They have internal procedures for deciding, just as churches do, just as the Cato Institute has internal procedures for deciding what our policies will be. I don't want the court coming down and saying, well, we think the Cato Institute was organized for this purpose, so you ought to stop doing this and start doing something else.
But more to the point, your client, James Dale, was not dismissed by, in your words, some bureaucrat in Irving, Texas. He was dismissed at the local level, which is the governance level of the Boy Scouts of America.
That's not correct. He was dismissed in a letter sent by the regional executive pursuant to the national policy, which dictates and controls all of the rules. The regionals, the locals, are not free to make their own rules. They implement a national policy. And look who you had defending this policy.
Pursuant,
on the show.
I'm sure, to somebody in Jersey saying to somebody in Texas, what, there are capos out there, feelers, trustees, I mean, people looking out for the sexual orientation of members in the 50 states from Irving, Texas? Of course not.
No,
there was somebody in Jersey who said to somebody in Texas, we've got a gay guy in our troop. What do we do?
And yeah, that's right. And the national said, you must kick him out. You don't have a choice. It's not up to you. It's not up to the local. It's not up to the regional. It's not up to the scouts. It's not up to the members. It's not up to the troops. It's not up to the parents. It is a national policy of mandatory across-the-board exclusion. And, you know, David Boaz makes his point, and I understand he's very committed to libertarianism as his philosophy, and I understand that. But his quarrel is really not with my case. His quarrel is with the framework set up by the Supreme Court in addressing the same kinds of discrimination claims with regard to race discrimination and sex discrimination that were addressed in the 80s and the 70s and the 60s. The court there heard the same arguments when people from the Rotary Club and people from the Jaycees and from the big New York clubs that do business and host their members all went into court saying we should be shielded from this law against discrimination. We shouldn't have to admit women. We shouldn't have to admit blacks. We shouldn't have to admit Jews. And what the court said was, wait a minute, who's we? Let's look at what the membership came together to do. And that's what they did in this case. If the Boy Scouts were able to show, for example, maybe like the Cato Institute or the KKK, that this is an organization.
Thanks a lot, Evan.
Well, I'm just
how about the ACLU or the KKK?
Well, you're the one that gave the Cato Institute as an example. But and I certainly didn't mean to equate the Cato Institute with the KKK. But the point is that when you look at each institution, each organization separately, Cato Institute, KKK, or Boy Scouts, and you look at why did the people come together here, you don't just accept some bogus assertion based on prejudice without at least looking as to whether that really is why people joined. And the Boy Scouts is not an organization that people joined to discriminate. Our case is not a loss for the Boy Scouts. It is a win for the Boy Scouts because what it's saying is this organization stands for something good. And here's what it is. Here's what it means. And here's what the members came for. And gay members, just like non-gay members, should be able to share in it.
David Bose.
The bottom line question is not whether it would be a better policy for the Boy Scouts not to discriminate. I probably agree with Evan on that. Probably would. The bottom line question is who's going to make these decisions? Are politicians going to make these decisions for every organization in society? Or are we going to say that one of the strengths of America is having millions and millions of private associations, from the Knights of Columbus to the Hadassah to the B'nai B'rith to the Gay Men's Health Crisis to the Heritage Foundation and the Brookings Institution and the ACLU, and let each one of those organizations make its own rules and offer itself to the public and offer itself to potential members, and then let people decide which organizations they like? Or should we have one set of rules made by politicians for every group in America?
Let me jump in here and do some housekeeping, Evan. That's David Bose. He's here with me in Washington. Evan Wolfson is at the New York Bureau. I'm Ray Suarez. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Go ahead, Evan.
Well, first of all, I'm glad that David Boaz agrees with me that he wouldn't defend the actual policy, that he agrees that the exclusion of gay people.
Well, he didn't say that either. You're a lawyer. You know he didn't say that.
No, I think he did say that. I think he said that I hope he would agree with me.
I'm no Bill Clinton, but I did have the word necessarily in there.
Okay.
I don't necessarily defend that.
The court, let's say, agreed with us that there's absolutely no evidence that a gay scoutmaster, simply because he's gay, doesn't have the strength of character, can't follow Boy Scout values, can't take part in helping and assisting and serving the young boys and young men who take part in this organization. And my client, who won every award the Boy Scouts has to offer, is the perfect example of that. So I don't think actually David disagrees with that.
Well, let me jump in here at this point because he's made the point a couple of times that you don't want government being the referee on organizational principles on why it is that voluntary organizations exist. But a good question, which I haven't heard your your full answer on, is whether or not organizations expose themselves to greater or lesser scrutiny depending on how much they align themselves with publicly funded, publicly supported organizations and seek to further their own cause through using of public facilities. And it would seem to me that that might trigger, in legal theory and just in the way we're going to talk today, a different standard that the different organizations live under.
I think that is a much more difficult question. As I read the New Jersey case, and I'm not a lawyer and I wasn't involved in it and Evan was, so I don't want to rest a lot on this. As I read the New Jersey case, the entanglement with government was not a major element of the decision. They were simply saying, hey, we got a law, you got to follow it. Doesn't matter if you're entangled with government.
No, in
but
fact,
I think, go ahead, but I want to answer Ray's question.
Well, I was just going to say, in fact, entanglement with the government or close relationship with the government is one of the factors that a court can look at to determine whether an organization is a public accommodation, the kind of organization that would be subject to the law, unlike a smaller, private, more focused group.
Okay, fair enough. I think Ray's question is an important one, and I think it's a more difficult question for us to answer in our constitutional tradition. The problem is that when you have a government as large and extensive and expensive and grasping as the United States government, it is very hard for any organization to remain entirely free of it. So you get back to the question, do you want a diverse and pluralistic society in which we have private associations that get to set their own rules, or do you want the government setting the rules for everybody? The Boy Scouts do have some entanglement with government, and if Mr. Shields is still listening, I urge him to end that entanglement, and he's learning how dangerous it is to get in bed with the government.
It isn't grasping governmental power, David, that has the Boy Scouts recruiting in elementary schools for Cubs.
Well, yes,
for junior
high
schools.
No, I disagree with that. The more the government does, the more we have, if everybody goes to public schools, I don't think it's a good idea that everybody goes to public schools any more than I think it would be a good idea that everybody listen to public radio.
Well, I have to disagree with you on that. I think that would be a great idea. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. My guests are David Bowes, who you just heard, and Evan Wolfson. We're going to take a short break right now. When we return, we'll talk to the California lawyer representing a pair of twins the Scouts tried to expel for religious reasons, and we'll take more of your calls at 800-989-8255. To contact us here at Talk of the Nation, you can send us email at totn@npr.org or regular mail, the address here, Talk of the Nation Letters, 635 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20001. At 33 minutes past the hour, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for National Public Radio comes from this and other National Public Radio stations. Contributors also include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Kaiser Family Foundation for a coverage of AIDS policy, the W. Alton Jones Foundation for a coverage of efforts to reduce threats of nuclear war and proliferation, www.wajones.org, and the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
I'm Ray Suarez. Astronomers looking for evidence that the expansion of the universe is slowing down instead found evidence that the expansion is speeding up. Does this mean there's some kind of anti-gravitational force at work? Join Ira Flatow for a discussion of the new findings on the next Talk of the Nation, Science Friday, from NPR News. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the program. I'm Ray Suarez. Today we're talking about the Boy Scouts of America. Some of their long-standing policies are being challenged in court. Joining us now from Los Angeles is Taylor Flynn, a staff attorney at the ACLU of Southern California. Ms. Flynn is representing William and Michael Randall against the Orange County Council of the Boy Scouts in a case before the California Supreme Court. The Scouts tried to expel the two brothers because of their religious preferences. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ray.
Well, I think the sort of central documents of scouting are pretty clear about what scouting expects in the way of a spiritual life or belief in some sort of spiritual system. Duty to God, promise to obey God, and those sorts of things are in the oath, the law, and shot through Boy Scout literature. Do the Randall brothers have an argument that the Scouts should have to accept them anyway?
No, what their argument is that, in fact, there is nothing in Scouting's literature that says that agnostic boys or atheist boys aren't welcome. And, in fact, in the leadership manual, the manual that tells leaders how they should react to situations, it gives the example of an atheist boy. And it doesn't say, kick him out. It says, religion is a subject for the home and family, and scouting should set an example. So the boys' position and our position is that other than the scout oath and law, which uses the word God, there's actually no discussion of religion or requirement that a boy go to church or be religious in any of its literature.
Well, the last point of the scout law is that a scout is reverent, and in the handbook it expands on what that means. God does appear in the oath, the same way the Constitution appears in the oath of the presidency. You don't have a president who doesn't believe in the authority of the Constitution taking the oath and saying, well, you know, it doesn't really expound on what that means in the oath. I'll support the Constitution in my own way.
Well, what scouting has done, and the Orange County Council in particular, is to welcome all boys, and scouting, our position is, can't have it both ways. In fact, the Orange County Council signed an anti-discrimination agreement for $750,000 in funding annually, stating that no scout would be required to participate in any religious activity. So our position simply is, if scouting wanted to clearly make itself a theistic organization, then it can do so, but it cannot welcome all boys, get funding on the grounds that it won't discriminate, state in its manuals that it does not kick out atheist boys, and then do so.
Is the troop in question chartered to a public or private institution or a religious organization?
This particular troop is chartered through a private organization, although it uses lands on federal property, on naval lands, and gets funding from organizations like the United Way, which is public funding.
So how have things done in the lower courts?
The lower court found that religion was not a central part of scouting, that scouting welcomed boys of all religious creeds, and including creeds that did not believe in a supreme being, and ordered that Michael and William continue in scouting, and they have now been in scouting for about 10 years and are up for their Eagle Award and have, in fact, been model scouts and were selected by their peers as boys who exemplified the scout oath and law.
So when are you going up before the state Supreme Court?
We had oral argument on January 5th, and we expect a decision on around April 6th.
Thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Taylor Flynn is a staff attorney at the ACLU of Southern California. She represents William and Michael Randall against the Orange County Council of the Boy Scouts in a case before the California Supreme Court. She joined us by phone from Los Angeles. For the rest of the hour, we're joined by Evan Wolfson, senior staff attorney and director of the Marriage Project at the Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund. Mr. Wolfson is also the attorney for James Dale, the former assistant scoutmaster who was kicked out of the Scouts because he's gay. And David Bowes is here with me in Washington, the executive vice president of the Cato Institute and the author of Libertarianism, a Primer. Our number is 800-989-8255, and Mark is in Seattle, Washington. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Ray. Great show. I'd like to point out an irony here, and that's that it doesn't seem to get mentioned in this context. But for over 30 years, I've been hearing it widely reported that the founder of Boy Scouting, Lord General Robert Baden-Powell, was himself homosexual.
Did Lady Olive know that?
Well, you know, many people who are gay throughout history, including today, get married and have kids and families.
Well, and an interesting thing about that also is that Britain's Boy Scouts, which of course is the one that Lord Baden-Powell founded and which is the parent of the American Boy Scouts, ended this policy of discrimination several years ago, and of course there's been no problem. Likewise, the Girl Scouts have abandoned any policy of sexual orientation discrimination, and they're doing just fine.
But Mark, don't you think that there's a difference in this context, or at least the organization would see there being a difference between being out and being closeted when it came to working with young men
we're
and boys?
We're in a different time. Things have changed greatly just in the last 10 years.
Well, not only that, the court in New Jersey actually had a very strong statement on that. They said that in their view, there's a patent inconsistency in the notion that a gay scout leader who keeps his quote-unquote secret hidden may remain in scouting, but the one who adheres to the scout laws by being honest and courageous enough to declare his sexual orientation publicly must be expelled.
It's like the military, and they want people to be honest, but they don't want them to be too honest.
I mean, the Boy Scouts taught James Dale, my client, to be honest, to be open, to respect and defend the rights of all people, to have relationships with others that are honest and open, to be of strong character, to stand up for himself, to serve the community. He did everything they told him to do, and they kicked him out.
Now, see, I agree with Evan on this. I think this sounds like an admirable young man, and I agree there's a hypocrisy with saying, well, you could stay in if you lie about it, but we're an organization that teaches honesty. The difference between Evan and me here is whether we think that we should be able to use the power of government to impose our moral values on other people. I say that Evan is making a good point about ethical values, but I don't think you should use power to impose it on other people. Evan does want to use government to impose his ethical values on the Boy Scouts.
Well, actually, where I would just disagree with that a little is that, first of all, I'm not trying to impose my values here. What I'm trying to do is keep the Boy Scouts true to the very values they themselves put forward and that the members joined to be part of. This is what they themselves say they stand for. They're not my values. They're
the Boy Scouts'
values.
Let me follow up
on
that.
And just one other little point, David, and then I'll let you go. And that is that I really think David Bowes' quarrel is not really with this case. It's with the law against discrimination itself. And that's the same law that prohibits race discrimination, sex discrimination, as well as sexual orientation discrimination. When he says we shouldn't have laws that encourage people to play by one set of rules, those are the rules we're talking about, the same rules that protect everyone against discrimination.
Evan is right. My quarrel is not specifically with his case. It is with a government that takes another step every day to control another aspect of American society, and his case is part of that. But yes, my quarrel is with a much larger part. But I'd like to ask Evan, I assume he must disagree with Taylor Flynn in California, because there's no question that the Boy Scouts have made it clear that they are an organization committed to boys believing in God. The first sentence on their website says, the BSA endeavors to develop American citizens who have personal values based on religious concepts. So there's no question here of misleading. They said you got to believe in God to take the Scout oath, and these boys didn't want to.
Well, I would agree with you that it's a different case, and I think that one of the principles of these cases is that each organization, be it the Cato Institute, the Boy Scouts, or anyone else, has to make its own case. So in that, I agree with you, but I do think you talk about the first sentence. What about the rest of the sentences? Taylor Flynn made a very important point, which is that throughout the rest of the Boy Scout literature, this is not a requirement. It is not what they purport it to be in court. And in fact, one of the things they do explicitly state in the Boy Scout handbook and other literature is that religious belief, whatever they may be, are between the boy and his family, his church, if any, his synagogue, and so on. They do not impose any one particular vision of what religion, or for that matter, God means.
But just that there being that is left one, to them, as opposed to being none.
Well, but
that's a big difference.
They're pretty clear about that.
I think we can get into a huge philosophical debate, yeah. but it is another case. But being an atheist, being an agnostic, taking a principled position of conscience about your views about the universe and religion and so on, I think you could certainly make the case that that is a religious view.
Mark in Seattle, thanks a lot for your call. Martin's with us now from Los Angeles. Hi, yeah. Martin.
Thank you. I think that the result of this New Jersey decision is that every John Wayne Gacy and child predator is going to be lined up around the block trying to join the Boy Scouts, number one.
Well, Martin, why wouldn't it have happened already?
Now emboldened by this decision, the Boy Scouts is going to have to let people in that they otherwise would have excluded by virtue of the fact that if they don't, they could be sued.
That's simply untrue.
All right.
And I'll tell you why. It's untrue because we're not trying to change any rules of conduct or proper procedure or even how to talk about sex or sexuality within the Boy Scouts. Gay Scoutmasters, gay Boy Scouts, gay youth ought to play by the same exact rules as non-gay. We're not asking for any different rules. We're asking for the same rules. But the fact of the matter is, just because you're gay, obviously, doesn't make you a child molester. It doesn't in any way make you a danger to children. And in fact, the court said that my client, James Dale's exemplary journey through the Boy Scout ranks is testament enough that those stereotypical notions about homosexuals must be rejected. Now, if somebody wants to keep believing that every gay person is a child molester, I don't think we're ever going to be able to persuade that person.
That wasn't my assertion.
But I don't think
Martin talk.
I'd like to make just a second point, which is that by inference, if I understand the basis upon which the New Jersey court made its decision, then I, as a middle-aged male, would be perfectly entitled to join the Girl Scouts as a troop leader or whatever they have. And I think that would be insupportable to anybody with common sense. Yet, if I understand the rationale upon which the New Jersey decision was based, that everybody should have equal access to everything, then how could I or any other middle-aged man or man of any age be excluded from the Girl Scouts?
Well, in fact, Martin, that is an area of hot contention in Boy Scouting as well, in those units where there have not been sufficient male volunteers or fathers of members to lead troops and packs. Women have attempted to take roles traditionally set aside for men and have had to go to court over whether they should be able to do it or not. So, yes, you are intuitively going to a place where the Boy Scouts are already in trouble. Thanks a lot for your call, Martin.
You're welcome.
We'll go next to Susan in Salt Lake City. Susan, welcome.
Yes, in Salt Lake City, yes?
Mm-hmm. Hi, Susan.
I have two points to make. First, as I understand it, the Boy Scouts of America originated here in what you might call Mormon country.
No, very much not Mormon country. Manhattan. That's
well,
where the Boy Scouts were founded.
Let's not get into that. I have only lived here 15 years, and I am not.
Though the Latter-day Saints Church is tremendously active in Boy Scouting and has an enormous number of troop charters around the country. So
I know that. And I am not LDS. The point I want to make is that to call yourselves the Boy Scouts of America, that is the word, implies that you represent all of America. And you don't.
So in order to continue to call themselves that, Susan, you feel that they should have to take all comers?
Call
themselves America?
I don't say that.
Mm-hmm.
What I say is that you misrepresent yourselves when you say America in your name. I mean, the Boy Scouts can do whatever it wants. But to call yourselves, you know, to have a name that sounds as though it represents all of America is not right. It's not true. It's not accurate. And if you have a commitment to the truth, then you should not use that word. And I will say one other thing, because it came up in connection with the case in California about religious beliefs. I am a Buddhist, and I think that Buddhist beliefs, I was raised in a Christian tradition, but I chose Buddhism as an adult, and I think that Buddhism is as honorable, as truthful, as a religious tradition, as Christianism, but Buddhists do not believe in God.
But the Boy Scouts do have and recognize Buddhist faith, and always have, well, at least in the modern era, there is a Buddhist religious medal for Cubs and for Boy Scouts, the Sangha medal. And again, this comes down to not endorsement of one creed over another, but of the Boy Scouts' idea that whatever one you have, you should have one rather than none. Susan in Salt Lake City, thanks a lot for your call. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Brad is with us now from Cleveland, Ohio. Hiya, Brad.
Hi, Ray. How you doing?
Okay.
A couple of things, just preliminary. I, too, am an Eagle Scout, as you are, and have been a volunteer adult leader since 1982, including being a summer camp chaplain. I'm also a United Methodist pastor. My point is that this case, as well as the one in California, highlight a fundamental problem that I see in scouting and have seen, and that is that while the statement that was read indicates that scouting is based in religious concept, there is a particular and peculiar Western and really Protestant foundation to all of that, and everything else is held, is regarded with some suspicion. The statement that was made after the announcement of the Dale statement in the name of scouting stated that all religions regard homosexuality as, I don't recall precisely what the word was basically an aberration, which is patently not true. They don't really leave room for non-theistic religious people, which has been pointed out in the California case. And while they say they're open on the one hand, it's open with a certain amount of suspicion if you're not falling within the historical cultural parameters of really British and American scouting. It's a real problem.
Well, there are awards and programs for instruction offered by the Boy Scouts for Hindu Scouts, for Buddhist Scouts. There are fairly small religious organizations that are represented in scouting programs. I think they've tried to get away from a rigid orientation to the groups. But look, your parents and your grandparents are who they are. And Boy Scouts of America's grandparent is BP.
But I listened to the spokesperson of scouting statement on the radio yesterday, and it was real clear that there was a clear identification of family values with a particular Western Protestant tradition that other faiths simply would not adhere to. And saying that is, quote, scouting's position, close quote. There's not an inherent openness there. It's even though they recognize the medals, when it comes right down to it, they don't do it. The other point I wanted to raise was...
Quickly, Brad.
Okay. Being a local unit leader, the chartered organization is responsible for recruitment and selection of adult leadership. Somewhere along the line, Mr. Dale was selected by a local organization to be a leader of that unit, and apparently it was fine with them. And I haven't heard anyone comment on that, but that's a critical piece that the local unit approved of his leadership. And it was a national organization at some point that said, no, we're not going to have you.
Well, until something further was known about him that was not known in the first place. And yet no one has ever called into question whether James Dale conformed with all the other rules and regulations and ideals of scouting. There's just this one thing about him,
disqualifies him. But is it in fact true that the local unit and the local chartered organization did not know he was gay?
Evan, you're going to have to help me out here, but quickly, because we're just about out of time.
Yeah, no, I think it's true. They didn't know he was gay, and then the minute they found out he was gay, they were forced to kick him out by National, even though he had done nothing wrong and still exemplified exactly what scouting is about.
Well, we are out of time for this hour. Thanks to everyone who called, and thanks to my guest, David Bowes. Good to see you.
Thank you.
David Bowes is the Executive Vice President at the Cato Institute and the author of Libertarianism, a Primer. He joined us here in Washington's Studio 3A. Evan Wolfson, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Evan Wolfson is the Senior Staff Attorney and Director of the Marriage Project at the Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund. Mr. Wolfson is also the attorney for James Dale, the ousted Assistant Scoutmaster from New Jersey. He joined us from NPR's New York Bureau. Greg Shields, we spoke to earlier, he's a national spokesman for the Boy Scouts of America. He joined us from Dallas, Texas. And earlier we heard from Taylor Flynn, staff attorney at the ACLU of Southern California. Ms. Flynn is representing William and Michael Randall against the Orange County Council of the Boy Scouts in a case before the California Supreme Court. Talk of the Nation is produced by Ellen Silva, directed by Alana Hadler. The production staff includes Cece Fadupe, Susan Schuyler Engel, and Devin Robbins. Our intern is Michelle Myers. Rich Rary is the technical director with engineering support from Michael Cullen, Suzanne Mesnick in Washington, and Kirill Wheeler and Manoli Wetherill in New York. We had help from librarians Beth Howard, Kim Molesky, Rob Robinson, Tom Tuzinski, and Alphonse Vinn. It sounded like the band was marching past me, so actually the trumpets weren't quite that loud. Pete Michaels is the executive producer. On the next Science Friday, join Ira Flato for a discussion of a possible new treatment for melanoma, a vaccine that stimulates the immune system to attack the cancer cells. In Washington, I'm Ray Suarez, NPR News. Take it away, Glockenspiels.
This program is a production of National Public Radio. The views expressed are not necessarily those of NPR, the underwriters, or this broadcast station. NPR is solely responsible for this program. Tapes and transcripts of Talk of the Nation are available. Call anytime, toll-free 1-888-NPR-NEWS. That's toll-free 1-888-NPR-NEWS.
Support for National Public Radio comes from this and other NPR stations. Contributors also include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Borders Books and Music, in support of this and other NPR programs. Location information at 800-644-7733. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and Hewlett-Packard, providing computer communications and measurement products for business, industry, science, healthcare, education, and personal use. This is NPR National Public Radio.
This is Robert Siegel. Later today, on All Things Considered, the difference between serving time as an adult and as a juvenile.
You got to be real neat about yourself, basically, what I'm saying. You have to be real neat about yourself. You know, you don't really catch too many people trying to be cool because they ain't got nothing to be cool for, you know.
That story and the day's news later on NPR's All Things Considered.